FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for your listening pleasure, episode number 229. Take two. We're sorry, everybody, about the little issue that we had there. Brett was broadcasting from his computer, and for some reason it just crashed. So I'm doing the hosting this time, and we'll see if that does any better. We apologize for that. We apologize that everybody who didn't watch earlier missed all the pancake jokes. So
we're sorry, this is why you watch it live.
That's right, it's gone.
But see, the problem is some of those jokes did fall flat.
No, they didn't. Some of them had holes in them.
I thought they had some fluff to them.
A little bit of crispy jokes, you know.
Waffle pun.
I couldn't think of anything. we're starting over here from the top. So those of you who are watching last time and joining in, just bear with us, and everybody else who is joining in afresh, then it's all new to you, so never mind. But kind of catch you back up. We are talking tonight about Beast Wars and how it ties into the Generation 1 continuity. Apparently, this is a big thing that has been cropping up here as of late. I've been noticing it a number of times. I saw on one of the Facebook groups, I forget which group it was. I'm a member of so many, but, RFC's Brian Kilby, he replied to some of my, one of my comments. You know, it seems to be cropping up a lot lately. And I have noticed that, a fan posted in one of the groups, you know, someone said that Generation 1 is tied into, or Beast Wars is tied into the Generation 1 continuity. Explain. And I just had to facepalm at this. It's like, you know, this is a at least a 20-year-old argument. At 15 to 20 years old. If you've been on the internet, if you've been a fan for any length of time, you've probably come across this argument at one time or another. And we're going to try tonight to connect the dots for some of you and help educate a few people on how Beast Wars does indeed tie into Generation 1 continuity. But if you are watching us live, you can interact with us on the YouTube channel. We have a live chat going on. Say hi to everybody that's joined back in. We appreciate you following along and bearing with us. Also, Check us out on Twitter at TFYLP. I'm monitoring the Twitter feed. So if you have any comments or questions, you can tweet them on there. I can actually show them live here on the video. So if you want your words to be seen on screen, I can share them that way.
No selfies.
Well, I can't share pictures. I can share the text. And also, I want to remind people that if you love what we do and want to help support us, you can check us out at patreon.com/TFYLP. It's important. It helps cover our server fees, upgrades to our equipment. You know, several of us are getting pop filters, so you don't hear a lot of beating on our mics as much from our talking. It helps pay for software. Yes. It just helps us continue, and it gets really, really expensive to do this as we go, and we appreciate everyone who has contributed thus far. It's really important to us, and we thank you. And also check out our sponsors, CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service, where you can save even more on orders of $150 or more with free domestic shipping at CapturePrey.com. Also, Mega Toy Fan, maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with Mega Toy Fan. You can find Mega Toy Fan at all the popular robot and toy conventions year-round, such as TFCon and, well, used to be BotCon. So now I guess TFCon and wherever else
Hasbro
is big.
Hasbro convention.
Hey, Brett, will you be at Joe Lanta by chance?
No.
That's the next big one coming up.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to go to that one or not, but they have a sister one called Kentuckiana, I think is the name of it.
What about Lexington Comic Con? Lexington Comic Con, are you going to that one?
I need to book for the next year. They're that far in advance.
Wow.
Missed again. Yeah.
Wow.
They sold out. I tried to get that in September.
If I'm not mistaken, I know I'm going to be a helper with Capture Prey again at Lexington Comic Con. As far as I know, that's probably going to be the only convention I'm going to be able to make this year due to some recent health issues that I've had. Lexington Comic Con in Lexington, Kentucky, I think March 13th, I believe is when it starts. Capture Prey should be in the same booth area that they were in last year up on the second level. I'll be helping out there as well. And that is the first convention that Capture Prey is going to be at this year. And I know he plans on being at TFCon, Canada, Toronto, and as well as the one in DC, as well as TF Expo in Wichita, Kansas, later on this year. And I want to give a big shout out to Phil Searle and Aaron Haynes and all the ones that are involved in TF Expo. It's a great show. I know they're putting this year's show together, or in the process of putting it together. And I want to, while it's early in the year, I want to remind people that if you're planning on trips and stuff, consider TF Expo. It's a great little show. And Wichita, a lot of people say, why the hell Wichita? It's, what's there? It's actually a nice little town, great eats. It's in the beautiful scenery, going out on the prairie, driving to there from here. I'm not used to that. We're used to trees and rolling hills. Well, there you have you have rolling hills and flat. And it's kind of pretty. It's really pretty. Really recommend checking out TF Expo. It's a great show. So without further ado, let's get back into our topic tonight with Beast Wars and how it ties in with Generation 1. Mike, you were saying some things. Oh, I want to back up real quick. Joining us this evening is Mike Swift, a.k.a. Sideburn 2.
What's up, everybody?
Headmaster Don.
Everybody.
And Megamus Brett Lovell.
What's up?
I want to apologize for not introducing everybody, but we'd already done it once before and we're doing it again. But here we are. Again, Mike, you want to take over?
So we're talking about what were we talking about?
We were talking about how originally Beast Wars was not going to be held in the same continuity as Generation One, and then our friend Benson Yee got involved working with Bob Ford and Larry Dottillo, and how that gradually became both a sequel / prequel to basically it was its own set of bookends to Generation One.
You know, it's kind of done to remember. So yeah, so we were talking, and basically, when they started Beast Wars, and I remember seeing this on, I believe it's on either the Rhino commentary or it was on the Shout Factory commentary. They really didn't have any idea, or they didn't really look into G1. They sort of started fresh. They didn't want to tie themselves into G1 because, I mean, we have to remember that at that time, G1 had become a failing brand, or Transformers had become a failing brand. It was almost non-existent.
Thank you, Generation Two.
Generation Two brought a lot of success as far as innovation to the line, things we still use nowadays, but yeah, from a commercial standpoint, it was not as successful as they were hoping.
I actually thought it was Machine Wars that did it. That was kind of like the nail in the coffin.
No, it was Animorphs. That was crap.
we don't even acknowledge that that even exists. That's nothing.
Machine Wars was in... But wasn't Machine Wars and KB like...
I worked for KB at the time, and we all got like one shipment of each initial wave, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, but wasn't that like in 94, 95? It was...
It was 96, because I was working at the KB Toys in Raleigh, North Carolina before I moved up here to Virginia. And that
really... I thought it came before Beast Wars, and Beast Wars was 95.
Well, Beast Wars started to trickle out like very late in 95, but it was really 96 is when it really started.
I'm almost positive.
95, I think, is whenever the two-pack, the Primal,
I was going to say the very first ones. Yeah, the very first ones were labeled at 1995. That was the same year that they started going out with the Power of the Force Star Wars stuff, and that's all that
kicking. No, don't say that, please. Hmm. Please, don't ever... Bring up that
the 90s Star Wars was horrible. But anyway, did Machine Wars come before or after? I thought it was before.
It was before. I think it predates it, but it doesn't predate it by a lot.
So basically, all those was that Beast Wars 2 and Beast Wars Neo repaints from the Machine Wars line.
The Hasbro reps mentioned Machine Wars. Mm-hmm. Which we found out later they really weren't supposed to at that time. So, it had to been 94, 95, 96 through there.
You know, guess what?
Yeah.
I got one right here.
I mean, but even look at the packaging, it's very Beast Wars-esque.
Well, I think what this was is this was just sent out specifically as a store exclusive. And that's how they did that. But this was also during the transition, if you remember, from Kenner to Hasbro. And that's the same thing with Beast Wars.
Yeah, the first two waves all have, for Beast Wars, all have Kenner on the package. And then after that, I think it's Hasbro.
Well, we had this discussion once before, and I always thought it was funny that it went from Kenner Hasbro to Hasbro Kenner to Hasbro. And I still believe to this day that the reason that they went ahead and marketed Beast Wars under the Kenner logo was that if it did horrible, they would just do away with it along with the Kenner naming and kind of say, well, that was them, that wasn't Hasbro.
Yeah.
I really believe that was a little marketing strategy there.
Yeah. But I also remember the two-pack with Bat Primal and Crocagator Megs, that was actually Optimus and Megatron from G1.
Right.
So
even the comic
that was Yeah, so basically there was a little bit of uncontinuity going on bad grammar side.
And maybe we'll get to the the toy bios and stuff like that. But a lot of that goes it was definitely there with the pre-transmetal stuff, organic stuff. Transmetals is where the bios on the toys really switched over to being mostly parallel to the show. But a lot of the original Transformer or Beast Wars bios on the boxes were very unique. Didn't quite know what it was at the time.
Well, and also the fact that the toys also had a feature that wasn't on the show with the mutant masks.
Yeah, mutant heads.
Well, they had a lot of features like stuff that wouldn't really be seen again until like Beast Wars 2nd and Beast Wars Neo. Like you had almost triple changers where some of them turned into battle platforms or some of them turned into some sort of attack mode where it wasn't like a triple changer in the truest sense, but it was some of them had third modes and really none of that carried into the show.
Like Baboom had an he had an artillery mode.
Yeah.
But the good thing about when Beast Wars started, and I mentioned this before the crash, you know, we said they weren't going to tie themselves, whether or not they were aware of how much they were aware of G1, this was a whole new thing, which is good because you don't have all the baggage that you're going. It's sort of like X-Men to me. I can't enjoy X-Men because of all the backstory and baggage.
G1 was baggage.
Yeah, so that's why I like, for example, I'm drawing a parallel here. That's why I like the Fox Kids X-Men series, because you had the interesting characters, but you were starting with basically at the beginning, and you didn't have to know who anybody was. And if you watch the series, you got everything as it played out without worrying about all the comic stuff. And with Beast Wars...
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah. Well, with Beast Wars not being part of G1 initially, it was all new characters. But on a little thing called Alt Toys Transformers at the time, that's when things got really heated. That's when your Truck Not Monkey started. People suggesting, well, Rhinox is Ironhide and Cheetor is Hot Rod, and these are all brand new forms. And if you're old enough and remember sitting down and going through these threads, you remember the gigantic cluster that it was trying to be a part of the fandom at that time, such as it was in its early beginnings.
Mm-hmm. And because see, this goes back to one of the things we mentioned right before the podcast. We had to reboot the podcast here tonight. Beast Wars actually benefited from not initially being tied to Generation 1 as far as we knew, because as a continuity, it gave themselves to become their own, to get their own identity, to get us invested in the characters, and leave the fans to speculate, like you said, oh, these characters are, you know, Rhinox is Ironhide and Cheetor is Hot Rod. You know, it left the fans to wonder, you know, is this even really connected? We really didn't know for sure. And by the way, Jack says on TF Wiki, Machine Wars started in 97. So it was actually concurrent with Beast Wars. Since that makes sense if it was
it kind of makes sense being that the typeface is Beast Wars typeface.
Well, it makes sense. But, it was a store exclusive. It wasn't, every store had them.
That might have been when they were distributed, but they were made in 96.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Beast Wars had a chance to become its own beast, as it were. You know, I mean, to compare apples to apples here. And this argument that popped up on the internet here recently, like I said, is nothing new. It's the argument's been around, like Don referred to, at least 15, maybe even 20 years. It goes back to the beginning in 96.
Yeah.
So, I've got a facepalm as an old fan, and I've got to classify myself that. Me, Don, Brett, we're all old fans. Yeah, yeah,
I've been in this fandom for 20 years now, so you might as well consider me an old fan too.
You know, and Michael, all I got to say is, the longer you're in this fandom, the more you'll see recycled arguments. You know, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I chalk this up entirely. I even mentioned this back in the thread whenever Brian Kilby replied. I chalk this up to a lot of new fans coming into the fandom, whether it be through the live action movies or just rediscovering Transformers altogether or discovering Transformers for the very first time. They're becoming big fans. They're going back and finding some of these old series and watching them. And
or not watching them, if they have to ask this question.
Well, they might not watch them in order. You know, I mean, if they discover Beast Wars, you know, you might say, hey, I don't understand how this ties to Generation 1. And at this point, to say you're not familiar with Generation 1 characters, it's kind of silly to say that, because a lot of our Combiner Wars, Titan Returns, the entire Masterpiece line, with the exception of the couple Beast Era ones that we're getting here now.
I would argue that since 2007, if not earlier, G1 has become a bit more of the forefront, since the movies sort of base themselves on G1 characters loosely, but at the same time, that's when classics kicked up. Animated had a lot of G1 influence, and so on. So,
well, and it goes to say that there were several years there, and I dare say, from the beginning of, well, from RID all the way through, like you said, in 2007-ish, the Hasbro's stance on Generation 1 was like, yeah, it exists, but we're not, you know, we're doing something fresh that's old. We're not doing anything. It's old. Don't worry about it. You know, just, you know, if you want some Generation 1 stuff, go back and buy the old stuff. Or if you really, really want it, here's a few reissues here and there. You know, we had MP01 through MP09, which came out really, really slow. You know, it's not like the two or three a year like we get now.
No, it wasn't until they downsized that line that they started really cranking it out.
Yep. But the good thing is, because I remember being watching Beast Wars, sitting down with it, because I remember a similar memory when the Doctor Who movie came on Fox. It was all sort of tied together, this whole mid-90s when I was watching all this stuff for the first time. And I remember thinking, this could be interesting. And again, the CGI now is dated, but back then, it was absolutely breathtaking. It was, because we had come off stuff like Reboot. That was a groundbreaking series.
By season three, I think the CGI actually it still holds up fairly well.
Yeah. But again, season one, early season two, it's a little, it's dated at this point. But this was brand new. This was exciting. This is something we had not seen since Reboot and for our other War Planets. For those of you that also may have watched War Planets. But I remember watching this, and I remember going on Alt Toys Transformers, and I was interested to see where this was going to go. I was hoping it would tie in, but we didn't know anything about these characters. We didn't know who they were. We only had a few glimpses of the robot modes pre-crash, and they didn't look like anybody that we knew. And so this was completely brand new territory, and again, the fandom was going wild. Because this is right when the internet was really getting accessible to your mainstream people, and everyone was wondering, is this Optimus Prime? Is Rhinox Ironhide? Is this Megatron? Regular movie G1 Megatron?
I think rightfully so. Because I actually pulled it up. Because if you were watching the show at the time it was coming out and you were buying the toys, this is the kind of thing you got. Here's Optimus Primal's bio. This is on the back of, you know, his Ultra Class toy. It says, "Move over, King Kong. Optimus Primal is ready to rock. The heroic leader has biogenetically re-engineered his body structure into a gargantuan robotic gorilla." So that's the first two lines of his bio, which basically implies that this is originally was intended to be, you know, G1 Optimus Prime. And then it goes on to explain, you know, his guns and stuff. I'm not going to read all that. But,
well, what was it, episode 21 that you mentioned, Possession?
And spoilers to anyone who hasn't seen it and wants to watch it, we're going to start spoiling the plot lines.
Yeah.
To quote River Song, spoilers.
But, you know, it starts out with a floating spark through space, and we hear a somewhat familiar-sounding voice, if you're familiar with the original Starscream. We start out with a familiar-sounding voice talking, and throughout the show, early on in the episode, he finds the Predacon Waspinator, and he takes over Waspinator's voice, and then with a flash of lightning, we see, and I'm screen sharing this with the viewers, we see this, Generation 1 Starscream superimposed over over Waspinator's body. And it's, I know for me, whenever I went through, and I was watching Beast Wars on reruns, you know, they were showing the Fox Kids reruns and stuff of an afternoon. That's whenever I first got to watch Beast Wars. And whenever I watched this episode, and I didn't know that Beast Wars had a tie to Generation 1. And I saw this. I literally had the hairs on my arms stand up whenever that flash of lightning, and you're like, oh, it's Starscream! Yeah, right. I just went crazy, you know, because I was so giddy that it was like Transformers, to me as a Generation 1 fan, had been reborn, and I was fully on board with Beast Wars now. Yeah. If I wasn't already, I was now.
Yeah. And you know, and this was the first. And again, you have to remember when this was airing, I was 26 years old. So I've seen a lot of animation, a lot of anime.
God, you're old, Don. Yeah.
So I realized, okay, they are. This is Starscream. They're tying it in, but we knew that there was some connection. We knew the Maximals were descendants of the Predacon, because in that same episode, Black Arachnia talks about them and their ancestors, the Autobots and Decepticons. Although the only thing about it is 300 years roughly is the time frame they're using, and I'm thinking they've gone completely from robotic vehicular forms to.
I thought it was
10,000. It's 300. 300 years is actually given in one of the episodes. But so we know it's linked. We know this is part of somehow. This is part of what's come before. But we really wouldn't. But we're looking at it from the standpoint of, okay, this is part of what's gone on before. What is this planet they're on? We don't know. And then we get to the end of season one, which is a pretty major cliffhanger. Again, spoilers. Prime dies. it's shock of shocks. A Prime dies.
It continues the trend that Optimus Prime dies in nearly every incarnation of Transformers at one point or another.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, Leomon. He dies in every version of Digimon. But we find out in early season two, the reason Prime died is one of the moons exploded and Prime was in orbit around them, was close in proximity to the moon. And then you have what is one of the most important things in the series, where Dinobot is talking to Waspinator, and they say, one moon now. One moon now, and they say, Earth. So we are on prehistoric Earth. That there.
And when did they say that?
Early season two, after.
It was the first episode, yeah.
Right after the moon explodes, and they see that, they realize they're on one moon. The topography has shifted a little bit. They realize they're on Earth.
Didn't they discover Stonehenge?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few alien sites. I'm not sure. They never really said Stonehenge.
It kind of looked like it.
Yeah.
It was definitely inspired. You know, back when it was still new and shiny.
But, I think it was about 4 or 5 episodes in the season two, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking up the thing now.
Because that's when when Dinobot goes and steals the golden discs from Megatron. Yes.
And then we find out what the golden disc actually was, where it came from. It was on the Voyager spacecraft. So that was another interesting little thing that was worked its way into the continuity. And so we're getting these bits and pieces. One, we find out it's part of Generation 1. And then we find out, okay, they're on Earth. So they're on prehistoric Earth. So how is this going to tie in? And then we get to the kicker. Agenda Part 1, 2, and 3.
They were sent back in time.
No DeLorean required.
Yeah, the event that happened at the very top of the very first episode of Beast Wars essentially not only kicked them out of their space, but also their space-time, and sent them hurtling back through time to ancient Earth at a time actually after the Ark and the Nemesis, the two ships for the Autobots and the Decepticons respectively, had already crash landed on Earth. And if you are familiar with the Generation 1 continuity, the Autobots and Decepticons were in stasis lock. They were shut off. They were shut down because of the crash. It wasn't until the volcano erupted in 1984 that reawakened Teletran 1 and sent them out and reawakened all the Transformers.
Which they sort of retconned a little bit of why they were in stasis that long, because when they land on ancient Earth, Maximals have to take on organic forms, because it turns out that the planet is so rich with unstable energon that exposure to it for too long will send them into stasis lock. So they sort of imply that the crew of the Ark was in stasis lock on Earth because of the energon, more so than the crash, which was never really explained in G1. But
I'm sure plowing into a mountain probably didn't help any.
No. Yeah, but that was sort of the implication that they added to it after the fact. So you know they did a little retconning in Beast Wars to sort of take what used to be the Saturday morning toy commercial, basically, that was G1. No matter how fun it was to watch, it had loose, narrative, flow. And they sort of, I mean, it didn't have a whole lot of like back history.
Which one, the G1 or Beast Wars?
Okay. G1 to
a well, you, it okay. Can also be argued, and this brings us to another point in tying Generation Beast Wars to Generation 1. And I'm actually of the camp that there's two separate camps, that it just ties to Generation 1 regardless of continuity. But it has to be said that there's actually two official Generation 1 continuities. One of them is the animated cartoon, and two is the Marvel comics. And Beast Wars, I think, more closely ties to the Marvel comics, although it does borrow some elements from the original cartoon. It assumes that that the Autobots and Decepticons were crashed inside a volcano, which I don't think really was fully covered in the comics, was it?
It was Mount St. Helens.
Mount St. Hilary in the comics, yeah.
Oh, was it Hilary?
Yeah, it was Mount St. Hilary in the comics, in the Marvel comics. And then it's further explained that, if I'm not mistaken, later in the Generation 1 comics, the reason for the Micromasters is because Energon was getting so scarce on Cybertron that the Transformers were starting to downsize themselves. And the larger Transformers like Optimus Prime, Megatron, Constructicons, all of the Combiners, they were Energon guzzlers. You know, it took a lot of Energon to sustain them, whereas with the Micromasters, their small forms didn't require as much Energon to function normally. And if you remember in the agenda, whenever we see Optimus Prime and all the Autobots and Decepticons inside the Ark in Stasis Lock, and the Beast characters, they're so tiny compared. I mean, even exactly. Optimal Optimus, who was huge compared to the other Maximals and Predacons, whenever he floats in front of Optimus Prime, he's barely, you know, bigger than Prime's face and chest, you know. Yeah, so
he'd be about the size of Bumblebee.
Yeah, he'd be about...
Maybe a little smaller.
That line of thinking, the Micromasters was really more of a Marvel comic thing. We never saw them in the original cartoon. So that's where I think they kind of blend the comic and the cartoon in Beast Wars. And it can be argued, I don't think it's ever directly said, but the Beast Wars characters are an evolutionary continuation of the line of thinking and the line in the lineage of the Micromasters because of their small size.
And also, again, this is all after the fact, looking at the pieces as they fell into place, not just Micromasters, but Pretenders.
Yeah.
Because of the organic bio shells they had as Pretenders.
A technological continuity.
Yeah. So, but I'm going to paint a real picture real quick. Picture it. Mount St. Hilary. Not taking it. The moment... Well, okay, the agenda part one. When the Tripredicus Council sends their best agent, this agent shows up on Earth. It's Ravage. It's Generation 1 Ravage in a new body. They capture Megatron to take him back for trial. And... Of course, that he's not there. He's there basically to eliminate Megatron, because we find out Megatron is basically a rabble rouser, a terrorist, a usurper. He's not really part of the Predacon hierarchy. He's his own little faction fighting his own little war. And then we get Ravage showing up, and then we discover that Tarantulas has basically found the Ark. And I'm just saying that at this moment, we've been watching this show for almost 2 years at this point, and Black Arachne and Silverbolt, who are almost a couple at this point, show up, and we see for the first time in this great CGI of the time period, and Silverbolt says, "What is this?" And she's, and Blacker says, "That, Jojo, is the Ark." And then it pans across the Ark, and you see the Ark in the volcano. That's when everything clicks in. That's when you, because when Primal says earlier, we're going to the beginning of everything, which is the Ark in stasis on Earth, and then we see it. That point is a defining moment in my as a fan, when everything falls into place.
My favorite line comes from that around that is whenever Ravage, earlier in the episode, he turns into his cassette mode, and he uses the original transforming sound. Yeah, which you know, it also reintroduces mass shifting in Beast Wars, because, you know, he goes from this rather large cat-like humanoid into this little tiny cassette and fits into the console. But it also uses the original transforming sound. But also, whenever Ravage speaks his final words, Decepticons forever. You know, that right there was the two words that tied officially to Generation 1. I'm sharing with the viewers right now a screen cap from the Agenda Part 3, and it's Transmetal Megatron floating in front of lifeless Optimus Prime. And as you can see, he's rather small compared to the large Optimus, you know, so... there's a visual for those of you who are viewing on the YouTube channel.
So, Brett, you've looked like you've wanted to say something for a while.
Yeah, I got a lot of things. well, the first thing is, no, I don't think it was more of a continuation of the comics. I think it was a continuation of the cartoon. And the main reason I say that is because of episode 21, Possession. And that is when Waspinator is possessed by Starscream. And we were first introduced to Starscream being able to possess is when he did it in the cartoons.
Ghost in the Machine.
He possessed Scourge. That wasn't in the comics. That was in the cartoon.
Well, that's why I'm saying that I think it's a meld of the comics and the cartoon.
I lean more towards when I was watching this, and I watched it when it first came out, and I loved it, and it got me back into Transformers. I actually went back and started watching the VHS, believe it or not, these things called VHS. You know, not a little disc, this little thing.
You actually had to rewind it if you wanted to watch
please
it again.
Please be kind. Rewind.
Rewind.
Some people are old enough to remember the gag gift, the DVD rewinders.
Oh, yeah.
You had to I actually remember whenever DVD first started coming out, and you could go to, like, Blockbuster, remember that place, and rent DVDs and stuff. Some people are ignorantly or jokingly sticking on the top of the DVDs, "Please be kind, rewind."
But getting to this, to me, that was when I first knew that it was part of the G1 continuation. Is when I saw Starscream, of course. And I think that's when you knew. Now, that was good. But I agree with Don. When we saw the ARG, I don't know about you, but the first thing I wanted to do is I'm like, I can't wait to see Megatron and Prime in this new... It's so realistic back then. Realistic looking. It's the best. I can't wait to see it. And then
it'll
we got
never
to see
get better than this.
It was like, that's it. We are at the pinnacle. It's not going to get any better. This is awesome. And it was. And yes, the little throwbacks they did, like the transformation noise from Ravage, was great. All that was great. But that wasn't until the end of season 2. If you look, it was season 1, way back in 21, episode 21. That's when you first saw Starscream. So I think it was way back then that you knew it was a continuation.
Okay. We had a clue before that. I can't remember when it. When Optimus Primal is captured by the aliens.
Oh, the Vok?
And they choose the Vok. They choose an image of a figure of authority.
This was after.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's an episode before the season finale.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. So you've got Optimus Primal being talked to by the Vok, who are the aliens that have set up some stuff on the planet, and they pick Unicron as the image by which they talk to Optimus Primal.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate evil. Yeah.
Right.
Which sort of was, they didn't, well, there was like one little blur where they say we chose this from your databanks. But if you missed that part, which I think I did as a kid, or at least I didn't remember it when I finally saw the 86 movie, I was like, oh, the Unicron was the aliens, which it wasn't. But actually, in Possession, not only is Starscream talked about, but they actually
mentioned Galvatron.
Well, they mentioned Galvatron, and they show Unicron in planet mode, because Starscream lies to everyone and says, you know, he fell by Unicron, and then, you know, later on, Black Arachnia is like, I've read the history. I know that you were killed by Galvatron, your commander.
For treason.
It was at the very tail end of season one that they started to really mix that stuff in, but you get a couple of shots there of like Starscream in the lightning. You see Starscream from behind when he's getting supposedly killed by Unicron. Going back to like the cartoon comic, I feel like, for the most part, I agree with Brett. They mostly stuck with the G1 cartoon until probably the season 3 stuff of G1, because in Beast Wars they are very much the Primus origin. Where in, you know, season 3 of G1 we find out the origin of Transformers is the Quintessons. So in that case, they definitely took that more from the comics, where the Transformers were created by Primus instead of being created by the Quintessons. So they definitely picked and chose what they wanted as their timeline. But for the majority, it definitely think it was more canon to the show.
With elements of the cartoon, comic.
Yeah, but, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it, I don't remember if they did it in the comics or what, but I thought that it was explained that what the Quintessons had told Prime and everything was a lie, that they actually created them. I thought that turned out to be a lie. They didn't actually occur.
In Marvel G1 comics, the Quintessons, outside the movie adaptation, there was no Quintessons in the Marvel G1 continuity.
Was that maybe 3H, the 3H comic?
I just remember they went away.
Yeah, it was in the 3H comic, because that's when they were doing the Ape Lincoln Sentinel Maximus, and it was that version of the Wreckers, and they found the Quintesson that was banished to this ice world, and they say, oh, all that crap that you were told, that's a lie.
Yeah, I kind of foresee this as, I don't know if a lot of our viewers or listeners are familiar with Stargate, the Stargate universe, Stargate SG-1 and everything. Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I'm actually marathoning it right now. But it's I liken the Quintessons to the Goa'uld from Stargate. The Quintessons come to Cybertron later on. They find the indigenous life, which are the Transformers, and enslave them as their servants. And that's where they come into be. And they eventually lie to the newer Transformers and say, we are your creators, when in fact they were not. They were just their enslavers. Draw that kind of similarity. Yeah.
The only downside is that gets a little fuzzy in Beast Machines.
Yeah.
Everything gets fuzzy in
Beast Machines.
Beast Machines.
That's the quote of the night right there.
Now
well, here's the thing.
Beast
here's
Machines, thing.
I'm going to be like most fans, and I'm going to pick and choose, and I'm going to choose not to remember Beast Machines. I'm just not going to remember it. Any of it. The techno organic turning organic. No.
Yeah. Well, and I believe it has the same thing going that that Beast Wars did, where when it started, like when Beast Wars started, it didn't know anything about G1. And so it was very much, maybe not a sequel to start with. Beast Machines definitely was a sequel to Beast Wars, but I think I remember that for the most part, it was a new team within Mainframe that did Beast Machines. And so once again, we had a team creating the sequel that was not exactly privy to the source material. And so we got some really funky canon breaking.
Imagine if you will that went on. Imagine if you will binge drinking for several hours and seeing this really hot woman across the way and taking her out and spending the night with her and waking up the next morning and finding out she is as hideous as they come. That is Beast Wars. Oh. And Night Beast Machines. it's like looking through drunk goggles, you know.
I was trying to figure out how you're going to make that analogy work, and I'm still like, oh man, oh
But
it's like looking at a woman through drunk goggles.
Yeah.
Well, so even there are a few things with Beast Machines that they...
Before we jump into Beast Machines, let's go ahead and just finish off Beast Wars with... Sure. I'm just saying, we had the agenda, we had the connections there, we had going into Season 3, which was the final season, Optimal Situation, which was kind of a letdown compared to the agenda... but you did have a lot of changing of the status quo in the Beast Wars universe. You had Optimus Prime going from Transmetal to Optimus mode. And then you got some new characters added. You had some characters taken away from Season 2 that have returned. I'm not sure if y'all agree or not, but I think Season 2 is the strongest season for storytelling...
In my opinion, it had hits or misses.
Yeah, but I think Season 1 did a good job of setting everything up. Season 2 was the payoff. Season 3 was the wrap up, but I think it needed some more episodes of Season 3 to not be quite as rushed as it was.
I'm with Don. I think Season 3 needed a lot more polish.
Yeah,
Season 2. You had. And I'm looking right here. You had the coming of the Fusors, which was... Then you had Code of Hero.
Yeah. Which is still maybe the best Transformers episode.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a solid... And this isn't nostalgia glasses. This is a solid episode.
But if you look, and I'm looking, the first season one had 13 episodes, or 26 episodes. It had the most. Then season two had 13, and season three had 13. If you look at two and three, they kind of start coming back, and then they'll do a pinnacle, which was Code of Hero, in my opinion, and then it starts to come down. But in season two, they went right into you had Code of Hero, Transmutate, which wasn't bad. It was an interesting story, and then you went right into the agenda, so it popped right back up again. So in my opinion, I think season two was the strongest of the three.
I forget if we mentioned it. I know we mentioned it before we had to restart the podcast tonight. Did we mention again on this reboot of the podcast tonight? Did we mention how the writers Bob Forward and Larry DiTilio came to? They really weren't familiar with Generation 1. They started out making Beast Wars their own thing. I think Benson Yee, he had a lot to do with that because of his correspondence with, I believe, Bob Forward of the writing team. He I forget exactly what he said, but he said that he, I think he said that he educated them on what came before Beast Wars, and they started incorporating that more into the series. And I think Possession was the first thing that we got of that. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, the episodes were being produced, you know, every couple weeks they were cranking out a new episode or something like that. And through the correspondence, I think Benson Yee helped guide them into tying it to G1. I don't know if he would actually claim this fame, but I think it could be argued that Benson Yee can be credited with tying it to G1.
And Ben has said in the past that it wasn't a huge thing. It was just sort of information that he was helping them with the characters sort of evolved into this. But we're going to give him a whole bunch of credit anyway. So there you go, Ben. It's all on you. Congratulations. Enjoy the fame.
He's a good friend of ours. He's been on the show before. If you're not familiar, he's got a website out there that originally started out as BeastWarsTransformers.com, BWTF.com. That's Ben's website. But now he calls it Ben's World of Transformers because, you know, we're well past the Beast Wars era. So he had just adapted the name to fit the times. But BWTF.com is Benson Yee's little corner of the internet, and he's got some great reviews and articles
I believe he went later down the line with the IDW source books for Beast Wars and tied in a lot of the Japanese Beast Wars and such into the same continuity. To fit a little better with the continuity, because obviously Beast Wars 2nd and Beast Wars Neo are part of the G1 Beast Wars continuity in Japan. However, the two of them, I believe, were released before the Beast Wars medals actually hit Japan.
So it gets a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Hey, on a side note, because I'm just kind of curious, because you're talking about the medals and all that. Did you, Mike, were you buying the Beast Wars? You weren't buying them when they were coming out, right? It'll be 95, 96, and 97.
I was getting them. I was mostly getting them as Christmas gifts and birthday presents. And
well, one of the weirdest things was, and I know Don will laugh at this, but was when we saw the trans medals, and I remember seeing them, and you had I think the first wave of the, I think they were called deluxes. The mid-size were called deluxe.
Yeah.
And you had
Rat Trap.
Well, the deluxe.
No, those were the basics.
You had
Primal. And then in that assortment, you pulled it out, you went, Primal, that's cool. We'll put him, you know, he's going to be, Optimus Prime was going to be turned into this. And then they pulled out Scavenger. And you're like, who the hell is Scavenger? So you looked at him and you knew, oh, this was supposed to be
Inferno.
Transmetal Inferno. And then when the show, everyone started getting their Transmetal Cheetor, Transmetal Primal, you never saw Rhinox, and you never saw Inferno. And to make matters worse, they didn't even call it Inferno. They called him Scavenger. And that bugged me.
So no pun intended.
It was so aggravating.
Yeah,
so
Scavenger,
bad.
Scavenger is clearly supposed to be Inferno. And I think the big reason why he's not is because Inferno was a shelf warmer.
And was...
guess who turned out to be a shelf warmer as well? Scavenger. at the end, you could probably find a Scavenger in a Walmart for about $5.
Well, here's something funny. I actually found a Scavenger in 2000, When did KB go out of business? It was early 2000s.
Yeah, it was the early 2000s, but I can't quite remember when.
I still found a scavenger there. They still had one. It was marked down to like $2.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, sort of ending, we were talking about about season three and everything. As uneven as season three was, they got Simon Furman to write the last half of Nemesis, which was the series finale. Simon Furman came on board and helped write the finale, at least half the finale. Do y'all think Beast Wars itself kind of ended well? I mean, like as far as season three being an uneven as season three seems to be to a lot of people. How do y'all think about the finale?
I thought it was... So, as far as it went, like, the agenda was probably more interesting of a season finale, and now we're talking about ending an entire series. There was a lot going on in it. They had a lot of loose threads to tie up, but it was overall, I think, very well done. They sort of made Megatron into this crazy, like, by the end of it, he was like this crazy religious, like, he saw himself as the destroyer of time, basically, and I thought they did a really good job with it. I think the agenda still has was the best, like, season finale in the series, but I think it ended pretty strong.
Yeah, the only thing about Nemesis being a two-parter is to clear the decks. It was basically a bloodbath of character death.
And it's like, who are we not going to carry over to Beast Machines? Okay, you, and you. Right. You did.
Well, it was really funny because Tigerhawk, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, was only introduced an episode before the first episode of the finale. And maybe two episodes, but I think it was only one episode.
Two. Hashtag short-lived.
Number 11. No, you're right. No, it was the one right before. It was called Other Victories.
So it was the one right before, and then I believe he is killed in the one right after.
Yeah.
The one right after is when Depth Charge and Rampage
yeah.
are destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, they kill each other. And the sad thing is...
Maybe he's killed right at the beginning of the last one, but
yeah.
I can't.
He is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sad thing is, Tigerhawk was two characters, Air Razor and Tigertron, who were fan favorites, and I really liked the characters, and they wound up just kind of getting basically sent to a peace conference, to use a Power Rangers terminology there. They were sent to a peace conference, came back for an episode or two, and then died.
Everyone and bites the dust.
Let's see here. I'm looking.
And
starting at number 11, which there was only 13 episodes. And it says right here that... just read it. Would I see it again? So you had... Tigerhawk was made by the joining of the two in number 11. And number 12, right off the bat... where is it? You had Rampage and Depth Charge die. Then they started the last one, which is Nemesis Part 2. And right at the very beginning, you get Inferno and Quickstrike are both killed.
By Megatron.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because Waspinator gets blown to bits in several episodes and survives.
And that's the funny part, because I mean, he even says here he quit. He says, "I'm done." And if you remember, when they left Earth, Waspinator stayed behind.
Yeah,
he was the king of the Neanderthals.
He said, "I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore." Yeah.
Yeah, wash. They can put their mandibles and kiss Washmander's big, fat, shiny, and then it sort of goes from there. But
thorax.
Yeah, but you know that's. It's sort of sad to see the clearinghouse of characters like that, you know. But it's, you know, like you said, Duran, they were clearing house to not have as many characters be carried over. Because you can imagine Beast Machines with all these extra characters running around.
We have to have a new, really, you have a new toy line. You need to introduce new toys.
I don't even know if they were necessarily thinking about Beast Machines. I remember some more commentary that for season two, where they kind of did the same thing at the end of season two. They weren't entirely sure if they were getting renewed, so they put several of the characters in a position where if that was the end of the series, then they were going to be presumed dead. If you remember Inferno,
yeah.
He blew himself up by igniting some unstable energon. That was intended to be, if it was the end of the series, his, you know, death. But he was obviously brought back in season three because he was a fan favorite, and death is only permanent when they decide it is.
I mean, how long did Scorponok? And he died early.
Yeah. He died in the first episode of season two.
Him and Pterosaur both fall into the lava,
and are never seen or even mentioned.
Who their does? Name, Scorponok and who?
Pterosaur and Scorponok.
Yeah, and
Pterosaur was a great character. I mean, if no one saw Starscream out of him, I don't know what to tell you.
He was Beast Wars Starscream.
Yeah, right. But the thing of it is, they're not even mentioned by name ever again in the series. But
they had to bring out new characters to sell new toys, and so they sort of cleaned house and got rid of a few characters. But I was always sad that Pterosaur was offed, because I've told this many times before. My first figure was Pterosaur. I have a bit of a fondness for Pterosaur. I would love like a masterpiece Pterosaur. So that he was off then was sort of disappointing. But
well, I feel the same way about Scorponok. I thought that was the neatest character, and I love the toy, and I would love to see a masterpiece of him. That would be phenomenal.
The only thing I'm willing to say about Beast Wars Season 3 is there's one slight continuity hiccup, but it depends on if you want to follow this. It's not. I'm just saying this for people that may see this. In order to combat Optimal Optimus, Megatron, Beast Wars Megatron, steals G1 Megatron Spark to wind up getting a new, more powerful form to counter Optimal Optimus. The scene where they showed his spark being returned was animated, but cut for time. So if you go back and if you see this pop up, you know, and the clip is available.
It's still available. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still
available. You can find it on YouTube.
But that's created a lot of controversy on since it was filmed, but not used. Does that mean the Megatron and Beast Machines is this, you know, I'm just bringing this up for people who, again, who might go back and watch the series and hear about this, saying it's a non-issue, but people make an issue out of it. But I mean, it's part of the season three. It's one scene that was cut for time, but people do bring it up from time to time as whether it's valid or not.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've gotten to the well off topic and just talking about Beast Wars in general, but
Beast Wars is awesome.
Yeah, well, it is. But I mean, you know, I think to those of those people who question, you know, how can you tie Beast Wars to Generation One? If it weren't for the obvious appearances of Generation One characters in the show, that should have been the number one connector for you. But, you know, I don't think it's an issue. I want to back up to something I said earlier in the episode, in that I think a lot of these questions, a lot of the people who don't understand come from fans who are either getting back into Transformers, just discovering these old series and may not be familiar with the original series. You know, you can be familiar with Generation 1 characters. I mean, it's inexcusable at this point with, you know, Transformers, you know, with Masterpiece, with Generations, Combiner Wars, Titan Returns, all Generation 1 inspired toys. So familiarity with the characters does not necessarily lend to familiarity with, you know, the lore.
With the canon.
Yeah, with the canon. And to fully understand how these Beast Wars characters, like Ravage and Star, and, you know, it can be, it's said now, I mean, it's without a fact, Starscream is a Beast Wars character, too. He's first and foremost Generation 1, but since he appeared as a central character in the episode Possession, he's also a Beast Wars character. So to fully understand where he came from, you've got to understand the original. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was going to say, at the same time, that's one of those instances where by creating the episode Possession, they retconned some, you know, an explanation in for the G1 episode where he possessed
Scourge.
Scourge,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Astral Train, and then Run Amok, and then Trip Dawn.
So even then, Beast Wars sort of gave implementing maybe some stronger like reasonings for some of that stuff, at least with Starscream. You know, they because the big thing they did is they introduced the concept of Starscream having an indestructible spark, and the character Rampage was supposed to be the attempt to clone or to create a Maximal with an indestructible spark like Starscream's. So they were doing a little bit of continuity cleanup at the same time as, which was kind of fun. It sort of, once they added that, you could go back and you can sort of just.
The one thing that bugged me though is that they added a paradox, because now you have Starscream's ghost in the past, and yet he's supposed to be on the Ark also for when he wakes up.
You know, that does beg the question, you know, if his body was there on Earth, why the hell didn't he just go possess himself?
Okay.
Well, he already had a spark in there.
Yeah, because see, basically you've got his spark has not left his body yet, so he has to maintain the timeline. And see, what Possession gives you a timeline. He's killed in the movie. He winds up being sent back in time to Beast Wars, and then either through traveling through time or just existing for that number of years, then he shows back up on Char to possess Scourge, and then he gets his new body. So you've got a rough timeline of how that happens. But if he had possessed himself at any other point along his own timeline.
Was it ever stated how he got back in time?
A DeLorean.
His spark can just transcend time. I mean, he can go forward or backward in time. It doesn't matter. He's dead.
Yeah, but like I said, at one point, there's two of them.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where if he goes and does that, he destroys the timeline, right? Megatron is crazy enough to destroy the timeline.
My point is back in 84 when Teletrime 1 revives all of them and Starscream is brought back, There's two of them still.
Yeah. But see, he can't possess himself because
if he never hear about it. What did he? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless he immediately went back to the future.
That's one of those
wonderful title for a movie.
Well, maybe you could argue that like a spark is not bound to like space time. It exists
on a different plane.
Okay.
No pun intended with Starscream.
Yeah. Continuums, you know, this, but they created one.
Well, they created one, yes, but it's sort of a fun one to talk about.
I can explain it. It definitely broke.
Go ahead, Don.
I can explain it four words: wibbly, wobbly, timey, wimey.
So Starscream was also a doctor.
So yes. we're gonna tackle MASH, right?
See, what was Starscream's Destron number? And that's the doctor number he was. D, like, 17. Doctor 17.
we got four more doctors to go.
Watch out, Capaldi.
Yes.
Okay, well, we put this off long enough, I think. I don't know about y'all. I'm willing to put it off even longer if we have to. But we might need to talk about that which shall not be named.
Armada?
Supreme Class Cheetor. Okay. You're right.
The other shall not be named.
So yeah. So if you're talking about the G1 continuity, and then the Beast War and Beast Wars being part of that, you have to inevitably go into the conclusion that Beast Machines is also part of that continuity.
It doesn't exist.
It's a hard one to actually accept.
It's a hard series to love. It's a very hard series to love.
It is. I actually vehemently, hated Beast Machines as a kid. I owned one figure, the Knight / Cheetor. Actually, my brother owned it, but I played with it a lot.
That was a good figure.
And yeah, it's a pretty good figure, but I refused to watch it. I watched a few episodes of it, and I was like, "This is garbage," and the toys were garbage. And I was out of Transformers for a little while until R.I.D. kicked in. That's not entirely true because there was a lot of great Beast Wars repaints released at that time, and the Beast Machines Dinobots. And the Walmart exclusive colors, like Tripredicus Agent, but I did not have an interest in Beast Machines.
I tried watching. I watched Beast Machines. I was trying to get into it. I mean, I was intrigued. How did they get here? How did this start off? What happened when they left Earth? What's going on? How is Megatron with his Viacons? What's going on? And then we get to the episode with Rat Trap. And that's where it starts really falling apart for me because the characterizations of these characters are not. Rat Trap would not.
As
do
if
that.
The robotic plant did not tell you.
I had no problem with Botanica. I had no problem with Botanica. I still want a Botanica figure.
Botanica of herself isn't a bad character.
I love the concept, but really, Rat Trap joining Megatron because he can't transform, that's when the show really started falling apart for me because of the characterizations.
Oh, well, how about the simple fact of how long did you have to go trying to figure out what happened to Rhinox?
Yeah,
and then they try to screw with you by telling them, well, this is me in a new form. No, it's not me. It's this guy. No, it's not this guy. It's this guy. I mean, and they kind of screw around with that.
Well, that was the one with Silverbolt that they really sort of juggled you around.
Right, right.
I didn't mind the red herrings because it was all smoke and mirrors. But again, it's I'll admit when I was younger during that time period, I was not part of the virulent hate towards the writers. I never let myself get that delusional. But I did say basically, you're ruining these characters. and Rhinox would never do what he did as Jetstorm. I'm sorry. That's when Beast Machines completely and utterly lost me. I mean, I watched it.
Yeah.
But I had no... I'll say this. The way Beast Machines treated the characterizations of characters that were so well done in Beast Wars, it retroactively kind of made me feel tainted watching Beast Wars, knowing how they end up in Beast Machines. It's like watching Digimon 02. You get to the epilogue and see where everyone ends up in 20 years. That sort of casts a shadow over watching them in the first series, knowing where they end up. It's same thing for Beast Machines. It's just... No!
Well, see, I will give... I'm going to give Beast Machines credit for one character. And I think... What's that?
The Dinothy
Probe. No, I think they accurately got the evolution of Cheetor correctly.
That's true.
Because he's sort of... He's the young, naive show-off at the start of Beast Wars, right? And by the end, they're sort of joking about how he's in his teenage years, right? And then in Beast Machines, he really starts to become, you know...
A leader.
Obviously, Primal's going off his rocker, and he has to step up to lead.
He's been smoking the ganja, and
yeah, Prime's going bananas.
Yeah, they hit a little too much of that that Cybertron acid they found in the core.
Getting a little close to Botanica there.
I'm telling you, it's all hippie stuff.
It was very hippie.
The thing for me, it all comes down to basically, and I hate saying this is sounding like I'm putting too much, I'm getting too worked over it. It was character assassination. These were good characters.
Well, if you Beast Wars, if you remember back in the day, and I was a member of a message board back then. It still exists today. Bot Talk. I think Bob Skurr and Marty Eisenberg were originally added by Renaud as moderators back in the day. But there was so much hate from fans around Beast Machines that they were literally getting threatened by certain fans.
So they
avoided the internet.
It's luckily my grasp of reality never quite slipped that bad, but
what the hell is that?
Okay.
What the hell is that?
I will tell you.
That is a groovy quintesson.
Okay, that is your shattered glass quintesson.
I want that.
That should have been in Beast Machines.
If you are watching the video version of this. There is a deviant art picture of a fan's version of a quintesson. Compassion, love, peace, joy, and satisfaction.
No, this is Collector's Club. This is official Collector's Club shattered glass alpha quintesson, or one of the main quintessons from the shattered glass universe.
Oh, they were going to make this or what?
No, it's in the comic.
Oh. Yeah, it was in the comic and in the prose works, but this is the shattered glass quintesson. Even his light beams,
his rainbow color.
when I think of Beast Machines, this is what I think of. Only was that awesome.
Because if you the audio portion, it was compassion, peace. It just.
Peace, man.
You scared off Michael with shattered glass. You scared him off.
The very first, put you this way, the very first appearance, and his name is Aquarius.
In the age of Aquarius.
The very first thing he does when they meet him, he says, and I quote, "I'm a quintesson, man."
And I'll be honest, I have tried to temper my dislike for Beast Machines through the years. But it's not been easy. I actually bought the DVD set and sat down and tried to watch it and give my older self a chance to rewatch it, and I couldn't do it. I watched 3 or 4 episodes and I sold the DVD set, and I don't care. I actually don't hate it
now in retrospect.
I hate it as much as I did as a kid. I hate it as a kid because it ruined the characters I loved. But honestly, I didn't watch the series in its entirety until the Shout Factory complete series release. That was the first time I had ever watched it in its entirety. So when I finally watched it, I was like, you know, this is still bad, but
there was
it's a bad that I'm okay with. It's
there
not
were some
very
good characters. I liked Savage Noble.
Yes.
I thought that was a neat concept. There were Stryker and Obsidian. I think those were great characters. There were some highlights in the show. I can't sit there. I'm not sitting here saying that Beast Machines was the greatest Transformers series ever, but I honestly don't think it was the worst Transformers series ever. I can actually sit down and watch Beast Machines.
It's not the worst. It's not the worst Transformers series ever. That there is one series that holds the honor. Worst Transformers series ever.
Energon, Armada. Energon. I mean, you keep going. No, both of them.
Armada and Cybertron are watchable. They're not super great, but they're watchable. But
there's some good toys, but the stories.
Energon
to this date. I have not seen all of Energon and Armada.
I haven't either. I'll be honest.
If you get past the first 20 episodes of Armada, it actually isn't bad.
That's like nothing left.
There are 52 episodes because.
It's 51 more than there should have been.
Well, in Japan, they released those three series as 51 episodes, because it's one for each week. But yeah, Energon, the first time I tried to watch through it, I couldn't finish it. And I finally, years later, watched through it, and it was the most boring, like, rip my hair out. I actually was so bored and I hated it so much, and like, I didn't want anything to do with Transformers after watching it, that I didn't watch Cybertron, and I didn't finish Cybertron until it was released by Shout Factory. That's how long it took me to finish Cybertron. Yeah.
I think Beast Machine. I liked what Beast Machines was trying to do as far as storytelling, but how they got there was the real kicker for me. And as far as characters, there's only one character in that show, as far as an overall character, that I really, really do not like.
Night
and screen. I think it's Night Scream. He tried to be the cool 90s kid, you know, the hip loner with the brooding little. I swear he would shop at Cybertron's Hot Topic or something.
The only thing that bugged me when you actually saw the character, and it was this, and that little, and he talking
the turd hanging off of his face.
His face. They started with a 3D render of Michael Jackson and just made it look a little.
I'm gonna finish up my thoughts on Beast Machines. I like what they were trying to do. They did not go about doing it in a fun way. I wish I hadn't bought half the toys that
I bought. Before we go any farther with Beast Machines, is there any G1 references or ties in Beast Machines?
I was actually going to get to that. So yes, despite it's not as prevalent as it was with Beast Wars, you know, the last three episodes of Beast Wars Season 1 through the end of Beast Wars. But, you know, when they show, like, statues of Optimus Primal, or not Optimus Primal, but Optimus Prime being destroyed and stuff like that. But the big thing was Vector Sigma and the keys to key to Vector Sigma, which were – Vector Sigma didn't look anything like Vector Sigma in the cartoon or in the G1 cartoon. But I believe the key was very closely modeled after the key to Vector Sigma in G1. And so it had some references. The big thing there is it was very loose, and with the whole techno-organic thing and like Cybertron having an organic past, it really sort of swept most of that linkage to G1 that they had introduced in Beast Wars under the rug. And they couldn't tell that story and still stick to what they had made canon in Beast Wars. So the only real big thing that was linked that I can recall was Vector Sigma and the key to Vector Sigma.
Pretty sure that's it.
Well, I mean, the way Beast Machines ends with Primal and the Maximals walking through the large fields of grass on Cybertron.
Not Primal.
Well, yeah, I mean, Primal's dead, but Cheetor and the...
Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Beast Machines take place way after G1?
Yes, they return back to their timeline.
They come back and we're past G1.
Yeah. Okay. And basically the way they explain it, because when Beast Machine starts up, the Maximals find themselves reverted back to their season one forms from Beast Wars, and they're being attacked by Viacons, and they're not quite sure why. And it's revealed that during the process of transferring Megatron back to Cybertron, if you remember at the end of Beast Wars, they basically strap him to the hood. He falls off while they're traveling through transwarp space. Yeah. They're transwarping, so he falls off, and it's alleged that he falls off and out of time earlier than the Maximals, so he arrives before them.
Right, gets there first.
And then he somehow takes over Cybertron by stealing every single spark from every corpse. Or not from every corpse, but from every... he made a lot of corpses because he stole all the sparks.
Right.
He created a virus that sent everybody into stasis lock.
Yeah, that's what it was.
But it took forever to get any...
To get to the point.
Yeah.
It took seven episodes for Rat Trap to transform.
Right. Yeah. Here's the one thing that I want to focus on as to how bad Beast Machines was. They only did two seasons, 26 episodes. That's it.
Yeah.
It was so bad, they wrapped it up and said, we're done. I mean, no other series went that short.
Yeah. But if you watch Beast Wars, don't... If you've not seen Beast Machines... Sit down and give it a try. You may like it. It may be that you will get something out of it that I didn't at all. So I'm not trying to keep someone from watching it. I just have pretty much, like Brett, just like it exists, but I ignore it. It ignores me. We get along. We nod politely across the room, and that's about it.
Yep.
The biggest thing I get out of Beast Machines now,
Battle Unicorn.
I don't have a Battle Unicorn, but I have a soft spot for the Beast Machines toy line. As I gotten older, I got a whole lot of it in my acquisition or in that when I bought a bunch of stuff off my friend when he was getting rid of his Beast Wars Beast Machines collection.
I was gonna say you probably got it all cheap.
Yeah, I got it very cheap. Yeah. I got his entire collection very cheap. Like he was getting rid of Beast Wars and Beast Machines, and he was like, I don't really care about the money. I just want I want to clear up space, and I know you love them, so just give me a little bit of money for them. So
yeah. But there are some gems in the Beast Machine, like Night Viper. Night Viper is a really great toy, you know.
Night Viper. I did like that. Yeah.
Ultra Class Jet Storm, if you can find one with still with the.
I hated that.
I loved it. It's just that I know the paint had a back really metal. Yeah had a real bad problem.
What was the other one called? Hammerhead.
Nightmare.
Hammer Strike.
Oh no, that was terrible.
Yeah. That was a neat when you transformed it.
I liked it. It's a solid figure.
That's right. I think it's a solid figure.
I'm trying to think.
Of Blast more, Punch. But, Blast Punch Primal.
Mm-hmm. Blast Punch.
That just was sold that one a couple months ago.
Yeah. Blast Punch Primal was.
Rather hard to find, at that.
The tank drone. The scout drone.
If they would have done that, a deluxe size would have been perfect.
Exactly, the tank drone.
The motorcycle. The thrust.
Yeah, the thrust drone as well.
Silver. Whenever. Everybody looks.
Silver Bolt.
Do not ever bring up the Cosmic Chicken again.
Everybody stopped and looked. I mean, what?
There's actually not.
He actually has a fan as a weapon. Yeah, it looks like one of those little Japanese fans.
Actually, those are weapons.
They were going for the samurai motif, but he looks like a gigantic space chicken.
Yeah.
It's like he's one step removed from being Chicken Boo.
Well,
he's one step removed from being Chicken Boo.
You know what, guys? I think we've gotten way off topic here. I think we started out here to connect the dots with Beast Wars and Generation 1, and I think we've done that. There are a few ties to G1 and Beast Machines, but for the most part, if you're not familiar with Generation 1, I suggest, and it's out there, easily accessible, DVD sets, you've got the Rhino sets, which are harder to come by these days, but then there's also the Shout Factory.
Yeah,
you got the Shout Factory sets. There's no excuse not to be able to watch Generation 1. And, we've said it before, Generation 1's cartoon is it's an acquired taste. I mean, we grew up with it. Many of us grew up with it. It's not perfect. It's got a lot of animation errors. Plot lines are cheesy, but... really, if you watch any of the Transformers series, they have a tendency to be cheesy at times. But Generation 1, for the fact that it was 24-minute commercials for toys, essentially, back in the 80s, there's still some good stories that was told back then. I know we had Buzz Dixon on a couple years ago at TF Expo. He wrote the episode God Gambit, which is one of my favorite episodes to date. I still love that episode. And it actually is, if you really stop and watch that episode, it has cheesy elements, but if you stop and think about it, it has a lot of deep thought, deep concepts in it. For all the people that bash Generation 1 for character development, it still has a lot of memorable characters, and I think there's a reason for that. There's a lot of characters that was on screen for 10 seconds or less, like Sixshot, Weird Wolf. They might have had one line in the entire series, but I'm talking about characters like Optimus Prime, Megatron, Starscream, Soundwave, Bumblebee, and then there's some second and third tier characters, Grimlock. There's a lot of good characters. Even though there's, you don't have to have, hours and hours of screen time to be, to have a lot of character development. So Generation 1 has got a lot of great characters. And if you're not familiar with it, it's what started it all. And Beast Wars harkens back to that. We've pointed that out tonight, as if it wasn't, immediately evident. We've highlighted some things that points out that that Beast Wars does indeed tie to G1, and
if G1 was a little bit like this is too Saturday morning toy commercial for you, Beast Wars was in that time period where the 90s is really credited with the Saturday cartoons that really started to try to tell stories. It's Batman the Animated Series and X-Men and Beast Wars and all these. It's really when they started to tell stories with cartoons, and so you might find that with Beast Wars that it has a more coherent plot a lot of through the entire, like, it has an overarching season plot that it alludes to in a lot of the episodes. So you might find yourself maybe a little more drawn to that if you think that, G1 has a little too little plot or too cheesy of a plot. It was just selling toys. But at the end of the day, there are two sides of the same coin. Beast Wars is a sequel, after all is said and done, to the original G1 cartoon.
And there's also plenty of compendiums out there and ways to consume the original 80-issue Marvel run, which, it's, even though it had many different writers, the original Marvel run at times was all over the place, but there's still some great, great storytelling there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Duran, do you think if there's anyone out there that is looking to start G1 or to get more information, they could contact us on the TFYLP Facebook page or even through Twitter and ask for recommendations from all of us?
Absolutely.
Episodes that we would recommend that you – if you're not sure where to start with G1, at least some titles of episodes and stuff that you like.
My recommendation is start with episode number one, More Than Meets the Eye, Part 1, and go through all 96 episodes. That's the only thing I can say, because, there's some episodes in there that literally are throwaway episodes, just like every TV series has some throwaway episodes. But there's sometimes something mentioned, even in a throwaway episode, that might be a little bit of information that you might be able to remember and harken back to in something else, whether it be Generation 1, Beast Wars, what have you. Don't just skip around, in my opinion. If we can recommend to you different episodes, if you want to go back and say, hey, what are the key episodes I need to watch? We can recommend those to you. But my personal recommendation is watch the entire series. If you're a Transformers fan, watch what started it all.
Watch Beast Wars, and then watch Beast Machines, and then watch R.I.D., and then watch Armada, and then watch Energon.
Just be a fan. Be a fan.
Don't watch Energon.
But if you want to look at specific things, there are episodes that can go back. More Than Meets the Eye, Parts 1, 2, and 3 of Generation 1, Season 1, it tells the story of how they got to Earth, and how the war rekindled itself here on Earth. You can watch SOS Dinobots and Battle or War of the Dinobots to see how the Dinobots came about. You can watch Five Faces of Darkness, Parts 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I know Don hates them, but that's a good starting point as well. After the 1986 movie, it tells a lot of story there. It picks up in 2005. it's our past now, but back then it was our future. It picks up.
Sucks.
No. But it picks up in the future for the Transformers. And, after Optimus Prime is dead and gone, it's the table. Spoilers. Yes. Introduced. And we see more stories. Unicron. Unicron becomes a central character, even though he's not necessarily alive in season three. He is a central character. He's referenced a lot, even seen a lot, as his head becomes a new moon for the planet. You can see Webworld. I would recommend as a good episode too, to understand the psyche of Galvatron, because Galvatron goes insane, and it explains just how insane Galvatron is. And then I would also recommend The Return of Optimus Prime Parts 1 and 2, how Optimus Prime comes back from the dead, as it were. And we have a Quintesson to thank for that.
And also Call of the Primitives, where you learn about Unicron and Primatron. His creation.
Absolutely. So there's lots of gold in there, in the Marvel comics, there's all kinds of stuff in there, and it's got a vastly different story arc than the cartoon. So if you're reading the comics, you're not going to read the same story rehashed.
Maybe the first comic, maybe in the first five episodes, but
yeah. But then, and then there's also some of the UK comics from Marvel. I would highly recommend Target 2006, which is a good story arc. You can buy that in trade paperbacks and as well as other compendiums. Great stuff. But I think we've run its course. You guys have any closing thoughts on the issue?
I'm going to repeat what I said at the top of the show. It's not really, it's based on the passing of a Dick Gauthier, who was season three Rodimus Prime, passed away today. We mentioned that on the original broadcast, but again, our condolences to his family and friends on his passing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brett, you have any closing thoughts?
Going back to just real quick on the G1 episodes, Fire in the Sky was probably my favorite, with Skyfire.
Absolutely. Brett or Michael, you have any G1 favorites? Episodes that really stand out to you?
I can't really name an episode, but I'm probably a fan of any episode that was centric around Hound or Cyclonus, because I sort of like both those characters quite a bit. But I don't know. It's been a long time. It's been like 10 years since I watched G1, and I've only ever watched it through once. So if you want some good Beast Wars episodes, you can always watch Code of Hero. We mentioned it once already.
It's a good one.
I like that episode. I can't say it's my favorite, though. I'm probably the one to center in this group. But it is a good episode. I think Possession is my favorite, because, like we said earlier, that was the one episode that tied it to my generation and made me realize, hey, the connection is there, and the franchise I love is being continued on.
Possession was fun. There's a lot of good ones. There's the A Better Mousetrap's a fun episode.
The Low Road. Megatron gets defeated by a fart.
Well, that's not. Or is that what was that the name of the episode? The Low Road.
The Low Road. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't remember the name of that one. Yeah, that's.
I mean, as we stated earlier, every generation of Transformers has its element of cheese. So, Megatron being defeated by a fart, you can't get much cheesier than that. But I think we've beat this to death tonight. I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. Check out our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TFYLP. There's also a tftalk.net Facebook page where you can find news and information regarding the podcast. But the bulk of the discussion for Transformers and this podcast is on the Facebook group. And as always, check out tftalk.net for all the latest of TFYLP. You can find all the latest or all the old episodes on there. You can find out about the cast, see great pictures, and see some news, current news and everything regarding the franchise. Check us out on Twitter at TFYLP. And as well as, if you love us, subscribe and rate us on all your favorite podcast outlets that you consume us through, whether it be iTunes, Double Twist, what have you. Rate us on there. Let people know that you like us. Share us. And as well as here on YouTube, if you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe to our channel and like us. Let people know. That tells us that we're doing a good job, and it also highlights us to people who are looking for something to enjoy. If you enjoy us, help other people enjoy us. That's the best way to get us out there. We thank everyone who has done that already and are continually supporting us. We try very hard. We have issues from time to time, like we had tonight. You know, it happens. Although we're not having nearly the issues that we had, you know, over a month ago. And it's because of fans like you. We thank you. It's fun doing the show. We love doing the show. We love Transformers. And that's why Transformers is our listening pleasure. And we want to make it your listening pleasure. We'll see you next time on TFYLP. I'm Duran, along with Megamus, Master Don, on and Sideburn 2. See you next time.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.